getting there on time just isn't good enough. Traffic and weather on the 10s with Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's news radio.
Matt Granite, Channel 3's morning news. Will's Ways to Save is in. Love Shark Tank. Watch it when I can, and love seeing products. And once in a while, I see a product that I think I saw that thing on Shark Tank. Matt's tying that together for us this morning on a smart notebook. Is that right?
It is, and this is, as you said, this was a Shark Tank debut. That's sort of when it became known to America and the rest of the world. It's a reusable smart notebook where what you write down on what's called the Everlast, whatever you write down, from shopping lists to diagrams to presentations to notes, that goes from the notebook to your cell phone to the cloud. So basically, it's a pen and paper experience that's built for the digital age. It's endlessly reusable. You take your notes, you scan your pages with the app, and then you blast your notes to the cloud. We're talking Google Drive, Dropbox, Evernote. Whatever you write on the paper then goes to the cloud.
So when I get to the grocery store and I forgot the list, no problem. I can pull it down from the cloud, literally.
Absolutely. Okay. That's what it comes down to. You're on the go. You're feeling a little bit artistic. You doodle. You have a son, daughter, or grandchild. They want to draw something for you that is then memorialized within the cloud. If you've got something where you need to make a presentation for work and you're not handy enough to start using all of these computer programs to make your diagram come to life, flowcharts, whatever it is. The deal that I found today gets you the notebook system for under $30. All you need is a functional cell phone and you're good to go.
Love it. How much?
$29.99, free delivery, and the best deal I have ever seen on the Rocketbook Everlast.
Fantastic. Matt Granite, Channel 3's morning news, Will's Ways to Save. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here same time tomorrow. Just go to WTAM.com, keyword save, couple of clicks, and you'll have the deal. Thanks, Matt.
Awesome.
I look forward to meeting with Kim Jong-un, and hopefully that will be a success. And maybe it will be.
I think they're
all
right.
Maybe it won't be. We don't know. But we'll see what happens. But I can say this, they do respect us. We are respectful of them.
President Trump at Mar-a-Lago talking trade also with the Prime Minister of Japan. Get Mike Snyder Sports Mornings, 15 and 45 past. Frankie goes home, hits a homer, huh?
Well, you know, he has the flair for the dramatic, Bill. He really does. I think he's a special player. We all know that. And again, last night in the moment in his return to his home country of Puerto Rico, my gosh, he was hosting a clinic at the grade school he attended the day before. And a game was scoreless yesterday in the fifth inning, and then this.
3-2, the count on Lindor. Here it comes. Curveball swung on, hit high and deep to right. Back on it is Grossman at the track, looks up. That ball is gone. Home run, Lindor.
Oh, they were celebrating. It was deafening, the noise, as he rounded the bases after that to give the Tribe a 2-0 lead. Indians would go on for a 6-1 win after he homered. Later in the game, it was Jose Ramirez, Michael Brantley, Yonder Alonso also going deep. Corey Kluber, the beneficiary of all that run support, he was rock solid. 6-plus innings to get the win. 6-1, the winning score for the Tribe. The story was Lindor, though, who had quite a celebratory home run trot in front of that crowd.
I don't want to disrespect nobody. That's just how I do things. I'm going to enjoy it. You know, I'm in Puerto Rico in front of my family, in front of my friends, in front of the beautiful Puerto Rican crowd, and I'm just excited.
I think the Twins understood all of that. The two teams go at it again tonight. Now, the Twins have the native of Puerto Rico, Jose Berrios, on the mound. Carlos Carrasco is off to a great start. We'll go for the Tribe. It's a 7-10 first pitch. You can hear the Indians and the Twins on 100.7 WMMS as it'll be game two at the Cube between the Cavs and Pacers right here on WTAM 1100, as Kevin Love put it yesterday.
I believe that will come out, especially on the home floor, be a lot more aggressive than we were in the first quarter in game one. I mean, I think you look at the second through fourth quarter, we were better. There are times where, you know, we turned the ball over or settled into certain shots and mixed up some coverages. But, you know, we know what we have to do tomorrow, and that's, you know, come out and be more aggressive. And I think, you know, I fully expect Ron to set the tone on that end.
7 o'clock tip. We'll see how aggressive they are. We'll have it for you right here. Now, in the NBA, you know, take note out west. In a 4-5 series there, New Orleans won the first of the five seed, won the first two games at Portland. This is a different kind of matchup for the Cavs this year than the last few years in that opening round. They're not a 1-8 or a 2-7. Boston's up 2-0 over Milwaukee. Toronto the same over Washington. Browns have begun their offseason workouts. The draft's a week from tomorrow. Hugh Jackson, have you made a decision on which of those four quarterbacks you'll select?
I think they all are today. I think we have not settled on that yet. I mean,
I don't know if that's good or bad. You never know if they may have, and he's just not telling. You'd almost like to say one guy would have surfaced by now as the guy. According to Hugh, they're still examining them all, and they have time. It is a week from tomorrow. Hockey, Blue Jackets won the first two on the road. They lost at home in overtime to the Capitals last night, but still lead the series 2-1. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Bill Zimfer on a couple things this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Could play out to be very, very important here in the week. Months, if not years ahead. Bill, good morning. Mar-a-Lago yesterday, President Trump there visiting with the Prime Minister of Japan. They got a lot to talk about, right?
They sure do, and they hit the ground running yesterday, started talking about North Korea, and of course we heard a lot about it. A lot of information came out about North Korea yesterday. Japan has a couple of issues with the U.S. relationship and possible talks with North Korea. They want support of Japan's effort to rescue Japanese abductees from North Korea, people that were just taken, kidnapped from Japan back in the 70s and 80s, dozens of people. They want to get them back, and they want a commitment from President Trump to keep Japan in the loop on any talks about a North Korean summit, which we heard a lot about yesterday.
Speaking of North Korea, it's reported Pompeo had recently been in North Korea, huh?
How about that? A little Easter egg hunt for Mike Pompeo in North Korea. He was reportedly there on Easter weekend and met with Kim Jong-un as preliminary talks for an upcoming summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. A little bit confusing, though. At one point, President Trump seemed to say that he personally spoke with Kim Jong-un. The White House later backed off on that. Interesting point here, though, Bill, on Mike Pompeo. He is yet to be confirmed as the next Secretary of State, and we have two senators from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee who are now saying they will vote against his confirmation as Secretary of State. But there could still be a vote in the Senate. If he is approved without the endorsement of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, it'll be the first time that has happened since 1925.
Finally, Bill, Syria, we'll probably hear more at some point. They're in there checking about chemical weapons?
Well, we don't know if they're in there checking. A U.N. security team, advance team, went into Douma, but as of last report, the 9-member inspection team from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons has yet to start any kind of inquiry in that region. So we're hoping they get in there today.
A few other stories we'll be following throughout the day, and I'm sure Rush will be talking about following the news at noon on News Radio WTAM 1100. Our Bill Zimfer. Thanks, bud.
You're welcome, Bill.
Go to WTAM.com, Wills and Snyder page. Also, Scott Scuderese, producer extraordinaire, putting together a wonderful tribute. She was the mother to one, the wife to another. Barbara Bush passes last night at the age of 92, her husband of 73 years. 41 was by her side.
I've been the luckiest woman in the world, truthfully. And I know it.
She earned and won the respect of a lot of American people because they saw her what she is, down to earth. Loving mother and setting an example with no bull about it.
Why do you think we call you the enforcer?
Well, because I enforce. If you do something bad, I point it out to you. There are other people out there that are very qualified, and we've had enough Bushes. I could hardly breathe. I thought he was so beautiful.
Strange, I admit.
Still staying with your story?
After she died, it was a terrible time in our life. And George put his arms around me and did not let me step away. You've got two choices in life. You can like what you do, or you can dislike what you do. I've chosen to like what I do, and I think I'm the luckiest woman in the world.
At the end of your life, you will never regret not having passed one more test, winning one more verdict, or not closing one more deal. You will regret time not spent with a husband, a child, a friend, or a parent.
Amen, amen. That was a part of a speech made at a college. Interestingly enough, the first lady at the time, when 41 was in office, invited to speak, and there were about 150, 200 people that signed a petition saying, well, maybe she's not the not the woman we want to speak, because she never held a job. That was the protest. Do you imagine that? And Barbara Bush went right in there and spoke and talked about the future and joked a little bit about a future spouse that might be a man for the White House one day. Smoky lady, down dirty. Lived a long life, 92, passed last night in Houston. See more at WTAM.com.
Well, what we're looking at is Stormy Daniels yesterday on The View, Bill, talking about how she has the sketch of the guy that she feels threatened her back in 2011 that she is still contending, and her lawyer is still contending, was hired indeed by Michael Cohen. So she released the sketch yesterday over the past 24 hours. Social media users have compared that sketch to the likeness of William Dafoe, Scott Wolf, Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones, and Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. So they're having a little bit of fun with it, Bill.
Right.
But again, this is the concern that this person came up to her, threatened her and her daughter, and said that they hoped nothing would happen to such a beautiful daughter and the mother of that daughter in regards to President Trump's concern about them getting this information out from the affair.
All right. She stopped by The View yesterday. Question, I guess, why didn't she call the police at the time? And I think she was also asked many times about just money in this whole thing, right?
Yeah, she said she was very concerned for her safety, the safety of her family. At that time, she was married. She was concerned for the safety of her husband as well. So she said that she also didn't want to have to go to the police and disclose this information about the affair that she had had with President Trump. She wasn't looking for that to happen. In fact, she was being threatened to not have that happen. So why go to the police and just open that can of worms, if you will? And at the same time, being asked by Meghan McCain on The View is this just a publicity stunt? Is this just a way for you to get more money? She said, yes, I'm dancing more. I'm making more money. She said, I'm done being bullied altogether.
All right, Michael Bauer on the Stormy Daniels of the last 24 hours. Thanks, Michael.
You got it. Have a great morning, Bill.
Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's News Radio.
The world of Greg Stebbin. You can figure it out. If you do, let me know. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Stebbin. Writes on tech, culture, bunch of things. Wrote a great book about the White House and presidents, too, over the years. Good morning, sir. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Speaking of presidents and that book, an absolute free plug, don't get me wrong, but Barbara Bush passing yesterday, the Bush family and the White House, I mean, she lived there as the wife to one and visited as a mother to another one, right?
You're absolutely right. There was another time in history where we had a sort of, well, a couple of times, mm-hmm. but we actually had We had a grandson and a grandchild as presidents, too.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Don't ask me who it is. Harrison.
Harrison.
Harrison. And then, of course, the Adams.
The Adams.
Family,
yes.
Father and son, and the Bushes. And I think there's one other family connection there, too, but I can't think of who it was. It's really, the presidential history is, regardless of your party
sure.
and all that,
sure,
it's
sure,
really
sure.
fascinating, fascinating stuff. Amazing human stories.
Great stuff. Greg Stebbin. All right. Why I've got you on, though, this morning is Greg is watching everything. There's a SpaceX. Elon Musk is going to try again today to launch a planet-hunting NASA mission from the Cape. He, of course, is doing most of our space stuff now. I see these Tesla automobiles everywhere, too. He's had a few problems along the way, but my goodness, he keeps exploring, if you will, with this economy. And a couple of problems, I guess he's going to blame on automation at Tesla. And there's a great tweet from April 13th. If I got this right, Elon Musk tweeted, in response to some problems, yes, excessive automation at Tesla was a mistake. To be precise, my mistake, humans are underrated. Interesting. What's the excessive automation? He's talking about there's too much technology?
Well, so this was in response to some problems they've been having producing the new Teslas as quickly as they had anticipated and promised. One of the things I love about this tweet, frankly, is excessive automation was a mistake. To be precise, my mistake. He's not blaming it on anyone but himself.
Yeah, good point.
And I think if you look at the arc of his career, what you realize is he's not throwing in the towel. He's not admitting defeat. What he's really saying here is, as always, I'm going to figure out the solution. And this time, the problem is me. But I'm going to fix it.
On the PR front, you got to like somebody that says, yeah, it's me. It's on me.
Yeah, absolutely. And following him on Twitter is a really great thing to do because he's got a great sense of humor. He's got a lot of humility. For instance, around April Fool's Day, there were a lot of talks about problems at Tesla, and he actually created this whole spoof on Twitter about how they were bankrupt.
Yeah.
And it was a total con job. It was so well done. People bought into it. The Twittersphere was exploding. But then, you know, he came back and said, no, it was a joke. It's April Fool's Day. But I think one of the reasons I like this tweet, and I think it's worth talking about, is, and if you go look at the interview, he did an interview with Gayle King from CBS this morning,
right,
and actually took her on the factory. I think it's the first time they ever let TV cameras on the factory floor. Is that I think there's been lots of talk about how robots are going to replace us all, and I think one of the most valuable lessons to take from this tweet is, if you're a human, which I think most of us are,
that are listening right now,
I think if you are smart and strategic about what you do next with your career and how you watch and learn about technology, just like Elon Musk is doing, you can make sure you're in a great place in the future for employment instead of being one of the people who actually gets replaced by a robot. Because as he's saying, maybe we're going to need more, better, smarter humans and less robots in the future. So put yourself there.
White House Confidential. I get a call from somebody. White House Confidential, a little book of weird presidential histories, the book I was referring to that Stebbins written, among many others, and it's available everywhere where nice books are sold. You can follow Greg Stebbins on Twitter at Greg Stebbins, too. Great follow. Greg, I appreciate your time. Thanks, pal.
It is great to be here.
All right,
Bill, I would add one. Barbara Bush had a titanium backbone. She was such a strong influence for her whole Bush dynasty. Giving presidents, future presidents, candidates, their conviction, courage, and character, but so often did it from outside the national spotlight. Do you ever recall hearing her argue with anybody in her family on a public issue such as a woman's right to choose? She didn't do it.
The Bush family, highly respected, and obviously will leave in history, a part of the Bush family, of course, is a big part of American history, right?
Well, it is. And her husband, whom she married for 73 years, just hard to imagine. They were married at college age. And she traveled all over the country, all over the world. I think they lived in 11 different places in 15 years. Her husband was CIA director. He was head of the Republican Party during the difficult days of Watergate, New York for the United Nations, Beijing, China as ambassador. And the everywhere she went, she'd drag the kids or she'd go with the president. She was a needle pointer, and she would needle point little animals and characters into her work so she could remember where she'd been. And when she came home, I think one of her more enduring qualities was how gracious she was to the people who supported her and the public life. When they came back to the White House after leaving years later, the president and Mrs. Bush went upstairs and spent an hour with the cooks and the maids and the bottle washers and the chefs and doormen of the White House, who just adored them before the Bushes went down and unveiled their formal oil portraits. They cared about the people around them.
Finally, Ann, I played a clip. There was a speech. She was invited to a college. A lot of people were protesting or writing that she shouldn't be there because she doesn't really didn't show what it was like to go and have a career. She brings Gorbachev's wife along with her, brought the house down, talked to him about life and what you really think about life and what you're going to look back on. She could turn those things around, though, constantly.
I quote her commencement address at Wellesley in every commencement address I did, and it's poignant now. She said, at the end of your life, you'll never regret not closing one more deal or winning more case. You will regret time not spent with a spouse. A parent, a child, a loved one. She said, what matters in America is not what happens in the White House, it's what happens in your house.
Ann Compton, we appreciate your time this morning as we talk about Barbara Bush. Thanks, Ann. All the best.
Thank you, Bill.
Cavaliers coverage on News Radio WTAM 1100. Game 2 tonight at the Q against the Pacers, brought to you by Huntington Bank. Our morning Cavs update, one a bank that believes in looking out for its customers. Welcome to Huntington. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside the always dapper Campy Russell. I'll bet he's already got his TV tie on this morning, doing radio on the hotline this morning. Camp, how are you, pal? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Well, we're down a game, and you know what? The hashtag whatever it takes that Gilbert came up with, I think that's a great theme for tonight. You got to get a win here on your home floor, right?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, and I think the only way that we're going to get that win, in my opinion, is to be much more aggressive than we were the other night or the other afternoon. And I just think it's just going to come down to how bad we want this game. And I think, you know, for the most part, I'm not going to say this is an absolutely must game, but we have to win this game tonight because you have to take away some of the energy from this young Pacer basketball team. And the only way that you can do that is be very aggressive and be physical and, you know, kind of control Oladipo.
Campy, the story the other day was really that first quarter. LeBron does not attempt a shot to almost 10 minutes in. We've seen him in the past where he like tries to get the other guys going. He needs a different approach tonight, doesn't he?
Well, in my opinion, I just think, you know, he has to get going early because I think, you know, as the leader of the basketball team of the Cavaliers, LeBron has to come out being very aggressive early on, meaning getting downhill. And when the team see him being aggressive for some reason, they follow his footsteps. You know, they follow him, you know, because he is the leader on the basketball team. So I expect LeBron to come out tonight and be very aggressive early on in the game, which would then get everybody engaged into the game and put everybody in a better mode than they were the other night because everybody on our team kind of went to sleep that first half for the most part. So tonight, definitely, we have to be more aggressive as a team, but I think it all starts with LeBron James.
Campy, beyond the final score, if I took a box score most nights as I've looked at the Cavs, if I just look at the three-point stats, with how they shoot it and how the opponent shoots it, I think I'm usually going to be pretty right in terms of what the result will be. Indiana, even though the Cavs made all their changes after the last meeting in the regular season with the Pacers, but the Cavs have had trouble with three-point shooting against the Pacers all year. Do you see Indiana doing anything differently that other teams have?
Well, not really. I just think in any team that we play against, if we don't have the ball movement and the spacing and the ball and the ball movement, the spacing and the movement, and then having guys getting downhill and creating opportunities for our three-point shooters, then we do struggle. So I just think that we just have to be more aggressive in terms of attacking, number one. Number two, keeping the spacing there. Number three, keeping the ball and body movement. And if we get that, I believe our shooters will have more rhythm because it's hard to shoot the ball when you're just standing waiting. So we just have to have more action. And the more action we typically have, the better we shoot the ball from the three-point line.
So get running, get that sweat going early on, get involved and get aggressive. Is that what I'm hearing you say, Coach?
No doubt about it. They got to come at it real hard tonight.
Campy Russell, thanks. Our Cavs coverage tonight, 6 o'clock. Cavs Now with Nick Camino. Tip-off show with Mike Snyder follows. Tip-off 7 o'clock from the Q on News Radio, WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. Campy Russell, thanks, partner.
All right, whatever it takes.
Guys, a 6-1 win. Hammy, good morning. Frankie Lindor goes home, hits a 2-run homer. I mean, you love it when a script plays out, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, how many times does it not? But that also tells you how darn talented, you know, Frankie is. And, you know, he almost hit more than one home run last night. And I just don't think any of us can probably even closely relate to what that must mean. Yep. And, you know, for his mom to be there. You know, yep. Remember, Frankie's dad moved him to Orlando when he was 12 because he thought he was a special talent and wasn't getting good enough competition in Puerto Rico. And we'd get better competition in the United States. So how many guys that have 12-year-old sons think their kid's that good? And they're usually wrong. Frankie's got some pretty smart parents, doesn't he?
Yeah, he sure does. And Tommy also, and I think we're going to see more of it. We saw it in the playoffs last year. He does have the penchant to make the big play in the moment, doesn't he?
Yeah, Mike, that's a great point. The big play or the big moment never seems to overwhelm Frankie. And, you know, remember last year, I know it didn't end well, but the Indians were getting clobbered in game two, and he hits that grand slam home run off the foul pole in right field against the Yankees and one of the great moments of the history of that ballpark. And you're right. I mean, a lot of guys, the big moment swallows them up. Frankie swallows up the big moment. He's some kind of special talent, and I didn't think, guys, we would ever have anyone remotely close to Omar Vizquel again play shortstop for the Indians. And I know they're completely different players, but how lucky have we been in the last 20 years to have, you know, Omar Vizquel and now Francisco?
Well put. Tom, I was just glad as I watched the game last night to see guys actually sweating.
That sounds kind of personal, Mike. yeah, you're right. I mean, Corey Kluber might have been getting tired because of the heat and humidity. And the Minnesota Twins had had 20 inches of snow dumped on Minneapolis-St. Paul over the weekend. Yeah, you're right. And I think it, again, proves how baseball is not meant to be played in 35-degree weather. And, you know, you just hope now we're going to catch a break here. But, yeah, it. I don't think we're going to have to worry about snow in Puerto Rico.
Well, Tom, we pay Snyder high money, big bucks.
For observations like
here,
that, so right? Yeah. Hey. I'm sorry. I've been watching these guys in masks and everything. I just said this is good to watch. 80-degree weather. They're sweating.
You know, it's a good point because I don't think we knew what most of these guys looked like anymore with the ski masks.
That's
on
true.
For the first 2 weeks.
Tom Hamilton on the Tribe, 6-1 win last night. Tonight, Carlos Carrasco gets the start. 100.7 WMMS is where you can catch it. Hammy, thanks, pal. Have a good day.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.